Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you got your seat belt buckled because it is time for Open Canvas with Mr. Thomas Becker, the completely insane, the mad painter. You never know where this guy's going to take you. Could be a trip down memory lane or right on up an astral plane. So stay tuned because here we come. It is next. Keep it locked in. Here we go. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Howdy, folks. I hope y'all are having a pleasant Monday evening. It's pretty nice down here in the swamps. It's cooling off. I think maybe we're slipping right into fall here. I know it's supposed to get pretty cold up north there where Lady Horse is. I think she's under freeze warnings tonight, or tomorrow night it is. I'm not sure which. But it's starting to cool off a little bit. Maybe it'll help them fires out there in California a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and play an old story, and then we'll open up the phone lines. This one Roe read for me, and he did an awesome job, and I like it. I know some of you heard it, but there's some out there who haven't heard it yet. So I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then we'll open up these phone lines. So here we go.
Boiling Pool by A. Mad Painter, also known as T.R. Becker by Mr. Rowe. It was mid-evening in the jungle, and it was hot and humid. The rain would soon come, thought Brian Bear as he got his light poncho out of his pack. It would drop 10 degrees in minutes, making it bearable for the night. He'd been in the jungle for almost 2 months now. Most of that time, he had been alone, but there were a couple of others that were sharing the main campsite along the Amazon River. There were a few natives there also, and he was sure that it would be given a name soon as a settlement. He was not even sure what they were there for, never taken the time to talk with them. He'd always been a loner. He did, however, know that two of them were some kind of professors. He had his own reasons why he was there and didn't want to share that reason with anyone. He never asked about others. It had taken him years to arrange to get there and many hours of making a fool out of himself. The rain began to fall. He slipped the poncho over his head, making sure his pack was covered. He still had 10 days or so of supplies. He didn't want to have to go back yet for lack of food. He thought back on why he was there. His grandfather had been a world explorer for most of his life. He He would tell bedtime stories whenever he was in town about his latest trips. He'd been to the Gobi Desert in China looking for dinosaur bones, to Belize, Guatemala in search of Mayan and Aztec temples. But the ones he really liked were the ones about the search for giants, the Amazon. The last time he had been there was in the 1950s sometime, and he had told Brian just when he was returning that a couple of natives had told him that they had actually seen the giant and had sold him a map. Now, he had contracted malaria a few years before that, and when he had returned, he came down with a bout of it again, and his exploring days were over. In the summer of 65, Brian had just turned six when he had passed away. His father had the old cabin where he had lived closed up, leaving it just as grandfather still lived there. He had never known his mother. She had run off when he was too young to remember her. So when his father passed 10 years later, it really hit him hard. It took him another year before he was able to get emancipated and was able to get around to visiting his grandfather's cabin. He had received a nice sum of money from his father's insurance policy, so he was in no hurry to go through the cabin. Staying at the cabin helped him to deal with being only 18 years old and all alone in the world. He spent 2 years going through all the papers, journals. He learned that the tales that his grandfather had told him were more or less true, and that there was much that he had kept to himself that amazed Brian. His grandfather's life had been about making sense of little pieces of information that he had gathered from around the world and over the history of mankind. It was at that point in his life that he began to make a fool of himself. There was still some water dripping from the trees when he took the poncho off. He had reached the top of a hill, could see out across a small valley filled with trees that rose again to a low mountain, a mountain range some mile or so away. There was a small river at the bottom that he was sure flowed into the great Amazon. He decided the hilltop would be a good place to make camp for the night, and he was glad the river was there. He could fill up his two canteens. He had just enough water to cook with, boiling some dry beef chips, adding them to a foil pack of beans. The only spice that he ever used was salt. It was needed when one was in the jungle, you see. Without a supply of it, you could die of hypothermia. Not a pleasant way to go. At 61, he was in pretty good health, but had some arthritis settling in his joints, so he took a couple aspirins, the only drug he ever used, before settling down and pulled out the only journal he carried. It was his grandfather's last one, and had a hand-drawn copy of the map he had gotten from the natives so many years ago. It showed that he was in the right area. He reread what was written by his grandfather for the 100th time. I have come to the conclusion that after all, I have not spent my life in vain. My research has shown that at one point in time in the past, there was a race that was worldwide in prehistory. And there is no doubt in my mind that it was by a race of giants. It is to my regret that I will not be able to bring this knowledge to the world with proof that they have not only existed, but are still in the world today. It was this statement that the first time he had read it that had changed Brian's life. He had always read what he could on the internet and watched many videos about unexplained events, There were a few that were looking into giants, and some of what they talked about were the same information that his grandfather had kept records of. He began to send them some pictures and information under different pseudonyms. He had a lifetime of information, and a lot of it had never been seen by others before. He kept the family's name out of it, not wanting to put up with all the conspiracy theorists who would debunk any information that didn't fit into what they believed, if it was real or not. He underestimated their ability, and soon his pseudonyms were traced to him by his email. And the accusations began to fly that he was out to make money on his grandfather's research, or that he was making up the stuff to become famous. And the whole time, he had been trying to remain anonymous. They went out of their way to bash him in every way they could. Some of the radio hosts had even shown up at the cabin demanding that he make a statement that he was fake. But, on the other hand, there were a few who wanted to help get the information out to the people of the world. He laid a log on the campfire and watched the sparks fly up in the air, being careful not to have too many. After all, he didn't want to start a jungle fire. There were many types of snakes that were deadly, and a bit out there were death sentences. He was not worried about them so much, but he was concerned about the jaguars, and a little less so about the wild boar. He did have his Glock 19, a semi-automatic 9mm. But in all the time he had been there, he'd never fired it. He'd used his machete more than a few times to kill a few snakes, chopped a couple of tarantulas. He tried not to kill anything, but sometimes it had to happen. He strung up his hammock just to the side of the fire, about 4 feet off the ground, laid back and studied the hand-drawn map. If it was to be believed, he will find the stone ruins of a city just on the other side of the river. He wondered what type of people could have built a city in a jungle like this. The natives there now only had small groups of a dozen or so, mud and stick homes, or just stick platforms with grass roofs. They had a simple life, but by no means were savages. They knew how to live in the best way for the jungle they lived in. He had guides for the first few times he'd gone into the jungle and learned as much as he could of how they lived. He was most at home there by himself. He knew just how much wood to add to the fire before turning in for the night. The sun was just coming into view when he woke. He shook his head. He thought he had heard the sound of drums just before his mind reached full awake, but knew that there were no tribes out this deep in the jungle. He threw some small sticks on the red embers of the campfire. The morning air was a little cool, but it would get warm pretty quick. He looked down into the valley that still had a lot of fog mingling with the trees, and he thought, well, it's a little odd. Yeah, the morning was a peaceful time in the jungle. The only things moving were the birds, looking for what they could eat, singing about it. He used the last little bit of water to make a weak cup of coffee to sip as he packed up the camp. He hoped to reach what he thought were the ruins before noon, breaking up a few remaining embers with his machete. He was sure there was no fire threat before he moved off into the valley. He chopped his way, thinking of what his grandfather had told him about how he had found a stone axe head, and that it was way too big for anyone to have used in the desert of Nevada. And to add to the mystery of it all, it was near what was known now as Area 51. It was what had made him begin to search for anything about giants. There was, of course, the mention in the Bible of them, but there were tales handed down over generations of Native Americans. He had even visited the Lovelock Cave in Nevada. He had visited many of the mountains of the Ohio Valley. And no matter where he would go, he would find something that was out of place. Tools way too big for a normal man to use, or structures that were more advanced than that of indigenous occupants of the areas. He had not started out to prove there were giants. It just happened that he kept finding evidence of their existence. He cut a vine against a tree trunk. He had started something that moved so fast that he was not even sure what it was. But he thought it was a lizard. But it had wings. It was a little as a hummingbird, but too fast. So he could not really be sure he had seen what he thought. He stopped and stood there for a few minutes in hopes to see it again, whatever it was. The jungle was quiet here, only a bird making an unanswered call to its mate every few moments. He started hacking again, and it was not long before he cut his way to the edge of the jungle along the banks of the river. As he stepped from the bushes, he saw something that slid into the water downstream. It was what he thought was the tail of a huge snake. Startled by his appearance, as large as it would have been, it should not have been scared of anything. He looked upstream. There on the other side of the river was the ruins that were on the map. But they were not ruins at all. It was a well-maintained wall, a good 35 foot tall, with the river running along its edge. It was inhabited stone city, he thought. He backed into the jungle. When his shock wore off, the map had said they were ruins, but it was clearly not ruins. He had not seen anyone on the top of the wall, but he had the feeling it was not deserted. He wondered why he had not seen any fires or smoke rising from it last night or this morning. A civilization able to build a wall like that would have used fire for sure, he thought. He found a place to sit down, and he pulled out the journal. The cave that was where the giant was to live was on the other side of the river and the wall. He wondered if the wall ran the whole 2 miles to the mountain's cliff, and if so, was it in as good condition as the riverside was? There were many questions it had no answers to, like, who were the inhabitants? Were they natives of the Amazon River Basin? He didn't think so, or at least not the ones who are there now. He was not sure what he should do now. Whatever it was, he couldn't take the risk of trying to cross the river in daylight. And he was sure he didn't want to run into whatever he had seen sliding into the river earlier. He needed to get some water from the river. He, after all, didn't have any. But he would have moved downriver so not to be seen from anyone who may be on top of the wall. He could find nothing about it there showing that there was anybody living around where the giant's cave was. The one who sold the map to his grandfather had never mentioned there was a city of people here. Could they have been lying about there being a giant? Other than the fact that the map had been accurate so far, there was a bend in the river about 2 miles south, so he decided to move there, try to cross. He tried not to cut any more than he had to for fear that someone might hear him. He was about halfway to the bend. He pushed back the vines, and not 15 feet in front of him were a couple of the little hummingbird-sized lizards dancing in the air. They had emerald green bodies and fast-moving turquoise wings that made them look as if they floated under light blue clouds. Without thinking, he made an "oh" sound in disbelief. Seeing him, they moved so fast in opposite directions, he had no time to follow either with his eyes. "Wow," he thought, "little dragons." Too bad he had not had his camera ready. But, of course, they would have said he faked them anyways. He thought that it was a beautiful sight, though, and he stood as still as he could just in case they might come back. But when a big green spider dropped onto his arm from the trees, he brushed it away and moved on. The Amazon was known for having many unknown species. The natives have known, but science was unaware of. He had seen many insects he was sure he was the very first to see. The little dragons could be just that, an unknown species of lizard. When he stopped for the night, he would be sure to record the encounter in the back of Grandfather's journal. He had never thought to start his own. Out of sight of anyone on the wall, he walked up to the river and was surprised that the water was warmer than it should have been. Well, it wasn't as hot as he'd liked his coffee, but it'd be about right for a bathtub. He filled his canteens but left the lid off so the water could cool off. Seeing as it was warm as a bath, he decided, well, what the heck, might as well take one. So he removed his clothes, folding them up neatly, and set them on a rock. As he was about to jump in, he remembered the tail of whatever it was he had seen sliding into the river upstream. It would have been quite huge, and he sure didn't want to be something's dinner. That thought was pushed out of his mind when he heard a rock behind him hit something. He turned around, expecting to see some kind of animal. But what he saw almost made him jump into the river, but he knew that would probably not have helped him. Standing where he had placed his clothes were three men, for lack of a better term to call them. They had stood between 3 or 4 feet tall, were all white, no hair on their large heads and big black eyes. Each held a spear in one hand that had only three long, slim fingers. They had no real lips to speak of, and their smile showed sharp teeth. He hoped that he was not about to become lunch. The tallest of them pointed at his staff. The other two picked their staffs up and pointed the end of their spears to motion him to start walking upstream. They were going to take him to the city naked. As he walked, he kept turning back his head to look at them. Could they be what were called the Greys? He thought, but he doubted it. They were too white for that. He tried to remember if his grandfather had ever mentioned them, but couldn't really think straight, being worried he was about to die if he was lucky. He pointed at his boot and then his feet, hoping they would understand what he wanted. They didn't get the idea or didn't care, as they were barefooted, but they had clothes on. He noticed that as they reached the wall, there was still no one on its top. The river bent around the wall, and they reached it. He could now see a rope bridge that reached across the river, but still, he saw no others. For some reason, this made him feel more uneasy than being naked. He had to bend down to enter the opening in the wall. If the wall was as thick as the tunnel was long, it was a good 15 feet. He came out into an empty, large courtyard. In the middle of the courtyard was a stone-ringed pool of boiling water. He wondered how it was being heated up. He had heard of the La Bamba River on the north side of the Amazon that was said to be the only boiling river in the world. This was no river, but it was a pool of boiling water. The taller of the man-things pointed to a door across the yard. He opened the door, and it was a big empty room other than a makeshift bed. He walked in. The taller one looked at his clothes, deciding he had no weapons, and threw them in. So he gathered up his stuff and was quite surprised that they had not taken his Glock 19. Who or whatever they were had no idea what a gun was. They did, however, take his small hand axe and his hunting knife. And he got dressed and was glad to have his boots back. The walk made his feet hurt, and had thought enough to put the lids on his canteens. He took a drink from one of them. The water tasted a little sweet, he thought. There was one small window in the one wall and a small opening in the door. He looked out the window, and the only thing that he could see was a patch of sky. He could see the boiling pool out of the hole in the door, not much else. He ate some beef jerky as he sat on the edge of the bed. He tried to figure out what the man things were. Where did they come from? And he couldn't remember anything like them in anything he had ever read. Maybe they were aliens, or maybe subterranean from the hollow earth. All of a sudden, the door swings open and a woman was pushed hard into the room. She landed hard on the dirt. He jumped to his feet and ran to her as the door was slammed shut. She was crying. He helped her to the bed. She laid down, crying into her arms. She was a Caucasian woman, no more than 25, 26 years old. Looked as if she would be at home in a big city and nowhere near the jungle. He had no clue what to make of her or how to make her feel any better. So he left her alone, cry to herself. It was getting near dark when the door opened again, and one of the man things brought in two plates of fruit and set them down on the ground. He thought about jumping up and using his Glock, but he thought he should probably wait and see if he could get the woman out with him. The shape she was in at the moment, it would not have been a good idea. So he picked him up and went to the bed and said, "Hey, think you could eat something?" She looked at him with watery eyes, then at the plates. She wiped her eyes with the back of her hand, sat up. She reached out and took one of the plates. "Thank you," she said in a sweet, low voice. He noticed that she was a pretty young woman. He took a bit of a mango and asked her, "My name is Brian Bear. What's yours?" He smiled. She looked at him for a moment, then said, "Lily. Lily Bork from New York." He didn't want to pressure her any, so he just sat there and ate. When he had finished, he found his flashlight in his pack and turned it on. He set it on the floor, pointing it up, and lit up the now darkened room. It wasn't a lot of light, but it was better than the overall dark. There was nothing to do, so she told him how she and her fiancé were on a cruise on the Amazon. And Jim, the fiancé, wanted to hunt a wild boar. They had gotten lost, wandered for days in the jungle. They were taken prisoners by a tribe who left them tied to posts as sacrifices to some god. Then the white man things came and got them. Jim tried to run and, well, was killed. He could see the tears begin to fill her eyes again, so he pulled her close to his shoulder and let her cry. They both fell asleep before he could tell her about his plan to get them out of there, how he would have to count on her to do what he told her to. There was no telling how long they were asleep when the door burst open and three man-things stood there. The taller one motioned for them to come out of the room. Lily didn't want to go, but he told her, "Don't worry." He patted his holstered Glock. She looked at him with surprise. He was still not sure what he was going to do, but the three things didn't stand a chance with him in a gun. The courtyard was lit from torches that ringed around the walls. They were stopped at the edge of the boiling pool. One of them stood behind them. The other two walked over to what looked like the wall of the building. Each of them took their spears and slipped the points into slots in the wall. They turned them, and the wall made a noise and began to move to one side. As the wall moved open, the two returned to the others, facing the opening across the boiling pool. There was a deep yawning sound from within, and then some rustling. Brian looked over at Lily, who had the look of pure terror on her face. He looked at the man-things behind him. They were all smiling. If that meant showing all their teeth was smiling. He looked back at the opening just as what could only be called a giant stepped out into the torchlight. It stretched, then yawned again as it looked at them. The thing was a good 15 feet tall, long, shaggy black hair. Wow, Brian thought. It was a male. He was sure it was a male. It only wore a loincloth. There was short, black, wiry hair all over his muscular body. He was quite impressive standing there in the torchlight. He rubbed his chin, and in his mind, Brian heard, "Well, what do we have here?" It shocked him to hear it in his head and in English. This was not how he thought an encounter with a giant would be. He had never thought it would want to talk to him, let alone know English. He looked at Lily to see if she had heard him too. She did not. "Are you here to steal my treasure?" The voice this time was more of a growl. He shook his head. No, never crossed my mind, he thought truthfully. "Then why are you here?" the giant asked as he sat down on the ground, crossing his legs. As fast as Brian thought, he thought about his grandfather and what he had learned, hoping that the giant was able to read it all. It didn't take long to do. Two of the man-things went into the tunnel opening. The other went into a door in the wall. "Well, now that is a good story to hear. It's nice to know someone knows how great the giants once were." The man-thing returned carrying two large pails of water and set them down in front of the giant. It sat down not far off as the giant drank each pail down. The man-thing got up and took the pails back inside. "Come to this side of the pool," he said. Brian saw this time Lily had heard him. She first looked at him. He nodded his head. She followed him around the pool. "Sit. I will hear more of this world you come from." This time he had spoken out loud. "How did you know to speak our language?" Brian asked. "I had just learned in the few minutes I was in your mind. You may call me Tosin. Now tell of what it's like in your world." For the next 2 hours, they each told Tosin of life out of the jungle. When Lily was telling him about riding on a train, in Brian's mind he heard Tosin. "You do know that what you call the man things will not let you leave alive, right?" He nodded his head just a little. "I do believe you can take them with that thing you call Glock. Just like you, I too am a prisoner. As long as they live, I cannot leave here either. that meant to feed you to me if you kill them. I'll let you go your own way. Or, better yet, you could take me with you. What he thought, that would prove to the world that his grandfather was right all along. He didn't have any time to think about it. He noticed that there was a man thing on each side of him. There was a spear at the ready with each. A third one came from the building and with his spear motioned to the boiling pool. They wanted them to jump in, he thought. There was fear on Lily's face as Brian got to his feet, hand on his Glock. The taller one stepped forward, spear pointed out to make him move closer to the pool. But that was not going to happen. As fast as he could, he pulled the Glock from the holster, pointed it at the tall one, and it looked bewildered. He started to step closer, so Brian squeezed the trigger. The noise was loud in the courtyard. He pointed and squeezed the trigger two more times. Tussin was smiling, ear to ear. Lily was still sitting there with her hands over her ears, in shock. He looked at the bodies and didn't feel too good about having to kill them, but it was the only way. He reached down and took Lily's arm and helped her to her feet. It was the only way, he shook his head. Yes, it was. They would have killed you. I'm in your debt. I was unable to kill them myself. I was under their spell to keep me here. I was their captive god, so to speak. It will be dawn soon, and I want to get as far from this place as I can, Brian said. Tussin stood up and said, first I must feed. He smiled down at them. Brian squeezed the handle of the Glock, ready. Tussin reached down and picked up the tall man thing. Both of Lily's hands went to her mouth as she said in horror, not raw! Tussin laughed. Tossed the body into the boiling pool and said, no, boiled.
Okay, phone lines are open. Numbers 229-299-5320. That's 229-299-5320. We're a Mad Painter on Skype. What'd you think? I think Mr. Rowe done a pretty good job on reading that for me. Wasn't what you expected at the end, was it? I want to remind everybody we are totally listener supported, and the archives are open. The login is Rev Rocks or Rev Radio, and Rocks with an exclamation point is the password. So they're free for now, as long as we keep getting enough money to keep the station running. We're going to keep them open for free. We've been joined by Daryl. Evening, Daryl.
Evening. Very nice evening. Actually, I'm in the process of doing a barbecue in my front yard, which I've never done before. I just wanted to say at the beginning you said that you had played this once before. And apparently,
yeah,
that's one I... Yeah, apparently that's one I missed. And Mr. Rowe did such a good job. And I'm telling you what, you know, hearing this for the first time myself, of all the other ones that I've listened that you've done, wow, this one is right up there. And the one spot, okay, there's a few selections. Parts of it where I was busy, I didn't quite hear, But, you know, the thing I thought was really, really amazing, you know, and, yeah, I mean, you got a good idea how many movies I've seen in my lifetime. And the part about the lizards with the hummingbird wings, the iridescent, that blew my mind because I've never, ever heard of that. And that was the first time that went into my imagination. And that
you see stuff like that in anime, you know?
Yeah.
They had, you know, I've seen it quite a bit, you know. But there wrote down another story for me, but I never put it up on YouTube. It's on the archives, but I don't know when it was. It was called Webster Nash, about a time traveler. And he read it live, dry, and it came out real good, too.
Now, that sounds really, really interesting.
But I never made a YouTube out of it. I need to find it. I don't know what date it was that he done it. I wish I did. Because I'd, you know, go and, like I said, he never even read any of it. He just got on here and started reading it and read it raw. And it come out real, real good.
So the one you just now played, it is on YouTube?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's up there too.
I didn't even know you had a YouTube channel. Man, am I missing out?
I've put it in the chat room a few times. Almost all the stories I've done is up there. The majority of them, anyways, that I've, you know, had read on air.
I probably wasn't paying attention to chat. Actually, as of lately, I rarely ever go into chat. And a lot of times I'd go into chat and go on my phone. I don't know why for like a month or so. My phone just won't. I mean, I go and sign into it and it just won't accept me. I don't know what's with that.
I don't know.
Anyway, could you put the link of your YouTube channel into Chatsy and then later on I can go in there and take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll put it in both chats. I don't care. Let's see here. Take me a second to get it.
I always thought
go up there and listen to Ether first and then go from there, because that's...
Well, yeah, I've heard Ether. I thought I've heard all the stories that you've done, but apparently not, because I never heard the one you just played.
I'm working on a few. I just hadn't had time to get anything new finished. I've got a few started, but nothing finished right now. Hopefully I'll have one next week. That's about, well, I ain't going to say what it's about, but.
no spoiler, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, the one that you just played, I think there's a really great.
And see, all them are raw, too. They're not, they ain't been edited like they would be if they were put in print, you know?
Well, the one that you just played, I think there's a very great potential there for it. Someone picking up and making a movie out of it. Over.
Well, I don't know. Or a cartoon, maybe. It's got a dumb ending, but, you know. Well, where is everybody tonight? All over there listening to Robert Morningstar. I guess he's got a big guy over there, doesn't he?
I don't know. I was for about 30 seconds, and then it dawned in my head that you know, when he's on, that you're on. So then I switched channels.
He's been drawing him a pretty good audience, and I noticed that. He does a good show.
Yeah, I haven't been doing it for a while now, but for a good while there, you know, while the archives weren't being uploaded, I was recording to DVD your show and then Robert Morningstar's show that, you know, coming right after yours. And those two shows are the perfect amount of space for one DVD. So,
they are. Huh.
Yeah, because, you know, the DVD is I mean, you don't have to rely on video. So you know, because if you're recording something for video, you know, 6 hours make video, you know, poor quality. But, you know, you're doing sound. So yours is 4 hours and his is 2 hours. And that makes 6 hours for a full DVD.
About the Sunday show. Is that?
Yeah, the Sunday show. Right. Yeah.
Well, I update the archives in the mornings. So whatever is done today will be uploaded tomorrow morning.
I thank you for that. How are we doing on donations?
I have no clue. As long as we're making it, that's all I need to know.
I'd just like to give a shout out for everybody out there.
If it gets low, then Lady Horse said, hey, we need to pitch more, so...
Yeah. But, I just like to say for everyone out there, you know, if you like what you're hearing, you want to keep on hearing it, please donate. I mean, even if it's a little bit, you know, just a couple dollars, you know, something's better than nothing.
I know my shows are, you know, not all that great. I mean, I get listeners, but they're not informative like a lot of our shows are. I mean, Scott does an awesome show. Giuseppe and, you know. Chicago Brew. Mitchell. Them guys put a lot of work into their shows.
Yeah, well, the thing I love about your shows is... there's a lot of thought generated, you know?
That's my thing. I want people to think. I don't care what they think about it, just as long as they think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because, you know, somebody says something and then in the back of your mind, you know, like that song, you know, makes you wonder.
Well, that's what it's about, you know. You can keep people wondering about things and get in there and start looking, you know. I ain't got that virus.
which virus are you talking about?
I don't know, any virus.
Well, you know, that virus is actually your own immune system protecting yourself, and they're calling it something bad. Really?
Yeah. I don't trust most of them anyway, so. I smoke with a bad lung, so I cough.
Cough with one lung.
Yeah, some people are complaining. The Chatsy don't work with Chrome. If you're coming in there with Chrome, you might as well give up trying to get in the chat room. You really need to use Foxfire. You won't have a bit of problem.
That's what I use on my my home computer. Well, my home computer is a laptop. I haven't used a tower in years, but on the cell phone, now I'm either Chrome or Google. Neither one of those will work, and you just told me why. But Firefox, are you able to put that on a cell phone?
I don't have a clue. I don't own a cell phone. I wouldn't have one.
Apparently, I just had a brain fart because I don't know how many times in the past that I remember you saying that exact fact. And well, I'm asking you that question.
It's unusual. Most people have cell phones, you know. I just don't have one.
Yeah.
I don't have a reason for one, you know.
Well, I tell you what, lately I've been having really, really, really bad luck with cell phones that I use just to get on the internet. My Galaxy 5, which was the very, very first cell phone that I ever had used, and then when I upgraded to the 7, I just used it for streaming, you know, YouTube, the station, and all this different stuff, and now it won't charge, so I can't use it because the battery's dead. Then I have this other one that, you know, that blitz sale that they have at Walmart during Thanksgiving, and two different ones of those that I bought that I've never ever used as a cell phone, but I purchased them strictly to use for internet, you know. And two of those has quit on me all of a sudden, both at the same time. And it's making me wonder if I'm having a relapse on what happened to me when I was in the military, when the radar would fail on me doing the test, you know, that I told you about, and not for anybody else, you know.
You got to ground yourself more.
you're probably right. You're probably exactly right.
Take off those shoes and run in the grass. Hug a tree.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the past, one reason I didn't do it, but you know, that's a good suggestion, because in the past, the reason I didn't do it is I had a dog, and you know, I don't like stepping in dog poop, but now that I don't have a dog, I don't have to worry about that.
Well, I watch where I walk. Yeah. You got to down here. You stepped on a snake.
Yeah. There's I'm in northern Arkansas, and the most common one is copperheads, you know. Which is not very good. But see, the thing is they like living up on the hills, and I live way down the bottom in the holler, you know, a dry creek is my backyard. I'm as low as you can get. I'm so low that I cannot even pick up one over the air TV signal. Dead air is where I'm at.
Down in the valley. And
yeah. And the humidity is unreal, and the mosquitoes are unreal too. But
we got them pterodactyl skeeters that carry you off and eat you later.
Yeah, the only snakes I've had in my backyard are gardener snakes.
Them are good. You want to keep them. They keep rattlesnakes away.
I just saw a cat walk by. You know, speaking of cats, I never had a problem with mice until my dog passed away, and now they've gotten into my house. Now I've been putting up mouse traps. You know, that's something I wanted to bring up. I would like to,
you know, a terrier. That's what they are. They're a mouser.
Yeah, but I'm not in chat. I'm not monitoring chat, and if you are, I'd appreciate. If anyone in chat has an opinion on this, is used to, you'd buy these little, they were kind of like a little miniature bag, and they're pellets, green pellets, you know, for to put out for mice. And they worked really good. You know, the mice really loved it. They eat it up, and, you know, it'd kill them. Well, now I can't even find anybody that sells those. Now they got these little green cubes, little rectangle cubes. And they don't, I put them out and they don't even nibble on them. I mean, the first thing I did when I found out I had mice in the house, I went through all my cupboards and everything. I bought a bunch of 5 gallon pails and I put every single thing that they could probably eat and I put it in 5 gallon pails. So the only thing for them to eat is these damn mouse poison cube things, and they won't touch them, you know. And I bought some mouse traps, and I've been putting peanut butter on it, and I'm having real good luck with that.
Yeah, they like peanut.
Yeah, I've caught all the adults, and right now by the size of them, I'm guessing I'm catching the children right now.
Yeah, but they even got a terrier. I mean, they got one called a rat terrier. I mean, that's what they do. They were, you know, bred to chase rats and mice in the factories and stuff. And then,
yeah, you know, the Boston terrier. Now that hits the nail on the head. I had three of them at one time, and I had this one called
at the farm supply place.
Well, I haven't checked out all the farm supply places. I checked out Tractor Supply; they didn't have it. Anyway, what I was going to say is
a commercial store than an actual, you know.
yeah, that's true.
Yep, there's our break. Be back in a few minutes, folks.
Mr. Rowe, I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time, that's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Aye, aye, It's Dr. Mundi. Hi, Karl Marx here. I am all seriousness today, my friends. There is this show you must not listen to. The ultimate remedy with this guy, LB. This guy has figured me out. I hear it on Tuesday, and he is telling the truth. I mean lies. Stay away from this guy. Where's my good hairbrush? Anybody seen Mama?
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
This is Lorian Fenton from the Fenton Perspective. You're listening to Revolution Radio, and now we take you back to An Open Canvas with A Mad Painter.
Welcome back, folks. I hope you're enjoying it so far. This is Open Call-In. The number is 229-299-5320. That's 229-299-5320, or A Mad Painter on Skype. Talk about just about anything. I don't mind. I do want to remind everybody that we need your money to keep going. So if you want to keep us going, you need to kick in a buck or two once in a while for us. We'd sure appreciate it. We got a heck of a Patreon following now. I think we're doing pretty good with Patreon. That takes it out every month for you, and you ain't got to remember to do it. Well, Daryl, where are you on? What do you want to talk about? What's bothering you?
Well, we don't even want to go. We don't want to go there. No way. But something that I would like to say that, I always thought it was Hawk, and apparently you informed me that it was you. And
what?
And the songs that used to play during Christmas, is there any way we can still do that and then, like, put it on the Hawk Nest?
Well, yeah, we could place music over on the Hawk's Nest anytime we want. That's what it's set up for. We've offered several of the hosts who like to play music to go over there and do it, and nobody's picked up the ball and done it.
Yeah, but I mean, these particular songs, you know, they violate the rules of the station.
Well, it doesn't matter on the Hawk's Nest because it doesn't go out on the air.
Exactly.
The only way you can get to it is by coming to the chat room and clicking on a Hawk's Nest.
I'll never forget. You know, I was at work. You know, working at night, and I'm listening to these songs. I'm really, really enjoying them. And I'm saying to myself, I cannot believe they're playing this, you know?
I gathered all of them together. I was just the one that played them, is all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, he had them in the... They're in our library for the station. And I just, you know, I went through the library, you know? We still have them.
Oh, you still have all those?
Oh, yeah, we have everything, you know? We have the original.
Not the bumper of the pizza delivery guys were.
There somewhere. Now finding it—that's the thing.
That's true. Well, you know, see, that's what I really loved about the way Hawk did that is like the majority of people do show. I mean, stations out there. And, you know, they cut out the commercials on their archives, and they just and that's what I really love about Hawk.
Because they get hit with the copyright.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I love about Hawk, you know, on his archives. the commercials stayed in there, you know.
Well, that's because they're only on our archives that way. They're not posted on any site anywhere that's going to flag them. YouTube.
Yeah, and
he used to fight with YouTube about his own music. They would say he was violating copyright when it is his music and his lyrics that he wrote.
Yes, exactly.
That's how greedy.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some postings commenting on what I'm fixing to say in chat. But I tell you what, I really miss I can't even remember the name of it. It was all the Idiocracy movie, where that woman goes up to the vending machine and
gets
big ass fries. Exactly.
Jay.
Good evening. I missed that commercial, too. I love that commercial.
It isn't gone. It's still there. We just ain't using it right now. It was overplayed.
Hey, Painter, that was an excellent story, and it was well read by Mr. Rowe, I believe.
Yeah.
He did an excellent job.
And, you know, all of them that the people read or I read on the air, they're all raw. They haven't been final edited or anything, you know, so.
I have to be a critic, okay?
That's why I read them, so people go, "Hey, that sounded like shit."
Okay,
you know?
there's only one thing about that bothered me, and that was the background music being just a tad, not much, but just a tad too loud. Over.
Well, I had to put something in the background.
Well, I'll tell you, in the background here is plenty of what appears to be solid smoke in our atmosphere.
You're getting it from down there and coming up in
Washington State,
Canada.
Yeah, and it's probably what I theorize is that the winds along the coast are helping it to migrate further north. And not necessarily directly like a southerly, but I'm hoping, I'm praying for rain, eh?
Ain't it strange how it's all American fires?
Well, I'll tell you, that is really strange. But Canada has some fairly large fires going as well.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. There are a lot of them being set, man. You know?
Well, hey, they were talking about several hundred people in jail now for setting fires.
Good.
In the United States. So it's not like it hasn't been monitored. And I'll tell you, with the fancy new technology that we have in the military, we should be able to see them, you know, as they're doing it, right?
Well, that would
be
too easy for them. That's I can't understand them, you know, chasing somebody and them to get away. They got so much technology. They can watch every single camera all the way across the damn country and trace somebody, you know? Yet they let somebody get away.
Well, Drive-Fly guy is saying that we have a nice break from the smoke in the Kootenays area, right? And the rain is helping the local fires and also some of the smoke, okay? Clearing the sky.
Something I like to mention is Australia. You know, last year, was their spotlight on fires. But I think from what I've seen happening over there right now, they need to change the name of their country. They need to change it from Australia to 1984. All right.
Might want to back that up with a description of why you think that.
I don't think there's no description needed. Everyone knows what's going on in Australia right now.
Well, you're talking about 1984, right? That's a book?
The book, yes. Book, movie, yes.
And what was that book about?
What they're going through right now.
Social changes, right? Military suppression, I believe. Over.
Yeah, and my most memorable moment that I saw was that pregnant woman, and she had an appointment to go that day to have an ultrasound done, and they came into her house and arrested her for some freaking Facebook post that she did. Over.
Yeah, well, they've done that here in the U.S. a dozen times in the last 10 years.
I think they've been doing it fairly recently. But I don't know. It's hard to get news through this breakup and all of these people being isolated. Very strange situation, you know. Hardly under control. And yet I'm thinking that one of the strongest things we got going for us is the fact that we all have weapons.
That's the only thing that's slowed down the New World Order is the United States owning weapons.
You bet. And discretion.
That's one of the things that Biden wants to get rid of.
Well, it's understanding how to use them is the important part.
Well, you know, that fits my thing I was talking about to a T, you know. Look how they did that crackdown on weapons in Australia. And now look what they're going through. Over.
That was like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's really bothered me recently is talking to Aussie Paul and having him describe what they're going through in Australia currently in terms of movement, freedom to do things, all of the changes that are happening to Australia currently. Over.
No, he can't even walk on the streets between midnight and 6 a.m., I guess.
Right. Absolutely. That's what I heard. Over. Life is beautiful, you know, and it's a shame that we've got so much disruption currently. We need change, too, you know. It's an opportunity to do things over or do it differently. What do you think? Over.
Well, you can't do it differently if they ain't allowing you to. That's the whole problem. People allow them to be manipulated. And until people stand up and say enough is enough, it ain't going to change. That's the main problem.
It looks like people are doing that in the United States. At least I'm sort of getting that impression.
I still see everybody wearing masks. That's one of the dumbest things you can do, and yet they still do it.
Well, you know, we've got that isolation. We've got that separation, you know, divide and conquer. Masks, no masks. I think we just ought to tolerate people doing what they're going to do and make up our own minds about what we're going to do. Over.
I mean, I ain't got a problem with somebody wearing a mask, but don't force me to do it.
Either or. Recently, I've been getting doctors visiting from Fraser Valley Health. And they did redo the dressing on my heel. I've got that real serious heel infection that I had to deal with. And now it's starting to heal up. And those people have been extremely kind. But on the other hand, you know, when they come in, they're wearing a mask. And I always ask if they want me to wear a mask. And they always say no. We wear the mask mainly for your protection. So, you know, there's a lot of kindness.
Well, that means they're sick and they shouldn't be doing their job then.
Well, it means that they're being considerate, more so. Over.
You know, if they want to wear it, that's up to them. I just don't see no sense in it.
Well, their intention, that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at what they intend. They intend to try to protect me. They're coming over to help me, and they're very kind. You know, Canada, you don't have charges for this kind of service. I would recommend it for the United States because U.S. medical is really out of control.
Well, yeah, when they charge $18 for an aspirin in the hospital, yeah, it's out of control.
Oh, baby, and that's not the least extorted
a bag of sugar water. They're charging, you know, $75 for, you know, a $3 bag of sugar water.
Yep. I used up 3 or 4 of those last month.
Since the 70s, when they made it so they could make a profit off of medicine.
You bet.
That's not a problem.
Well, you know, we've got to think more about each other and how we can do things that get us past the normal hesitations that we have. Eventually, we're going to have to. We're all in this together, whether we like it or not, right?
Oh, yeah. Right?
So whether we like it or not, we're all in this together, so we might as well, you know, make an effort to be somewhat pleasant with each other. I'm surprised that people have gotten so violent so easily.
Yeah, I got no problem with people wearing masks or not wearing masks. It doesn't matter to me.
Right on.
If they feel comfortable wearing a mask, that's fine. Wear it. If you don't feel comfortable wearing one, don't wear one. I mean, I'm not going to put one on. I can't breathe through one. I got medical reasons why I can't. I'm just not able to. But if I was able to use it, I still wouldn't use it because I know the science behind them. The science says it doesn't stop the virus. It even says it on the box if you read it.
It's like anything else. It's the only thing you do. You can do it, you know, or if it's the only thing you can do, you do it.
It's like owning a cell phone. I mean, I don't own a cell phone. I don't want one. Why should they force me to have a cell phone?
Hey, how long do you think? Go ahead.
It'd help if I took myself off of mute when I try to talk, right? Anyway, what I was going to say is, Jerbear on I don't think it was his, the last show, but maybe the one before that. And I've heard other people say what he said is, he wears a mask, you know, just because he don't want to have anybody give him crap about not wearing a mask, you know?
Yeah, that's ridiculous, you know? That's just like the vaccine. Yeah. If you want to have a vaccine, get a vaccine. If you don't want one, don't get one.
Well,
let me finish. If you don't get one, you're not in any way infringing on the guy who gets one because he's been inoculated, so you're not causing him no problems.
I'm enjoying it because I don't wear the stupid medical mask. I just wear a bandana, right? Because I can roll it up really tight and get it up there, and it's like you're breathing normal air, and you know, it's like, you know, a fake mask, I guess I'd call it. And I'm having a friend of mine, last year when Halloween stuff went 90% off, there was some fabric that was, you know, and I bought the whole bolt. There was like 6 yards of it. And I got the idea. So I'm having this friend of mine, and she's going to serge the material. You know, you got to serge around the outside or it'll fray away. But what it was is the bolt was a eyeballs. It's just a whole bunch of eyeballs. And I thought, wow, that's cool. Just in time for Halloween, you know. But anyway, I kind of enjoy wearing a bandana, you know, roll it up tight. So, yeah, well, I mean, it hides my face. And, so if I see.
I remember 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, it was against the law to even put a hoodie on your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Cities.
Yeah, if you want to rob a bank, you would wear one, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, the part I enjoy about it is, you see somebody that you want to avoid contact with, you know, and you've seen in movies and all that kind of stuff where this person walking toward them, so they start ducking and hiding, you know. Oh, you don't have to duck and hide no more. You got your face mask and you just walk right past them and they don't know who you are. Over.
Yep. Tell you one of the things my been occupying my thoughts recently is how vulnerable we are to an electrical disruption. And right around when the Mayan calendar was reaching its end for the period and restarting, we had three coronal blasts whip through between the Earth and the Moon. And I don't know how many people really know that, and I can prove it, but we very narrowly missed having everything electrical on the planet shut down.
Well, the carrying event happened, right? And that kind of thing happens about every 130 years, and it's been almost 150 years since that's happened.
Yeah, so we're overdue.
For something like that to hit us.
I'll tell you what's interesting is all the wires that you see outside will turn into red-hot filaments, and every transformer that's on a power pole will explode.
Yeah, it depends on the event is.
You bet.
You know, SJ, do you remember in 2012, the, I'm forgetting the title. I'm forgetting the title of the lady from Japan. How you have a king and a queen, and she's a princess, you know, of Japan, and she was and she had this video, and in the video she was saying, don't drink from aluminum cans because you know they're lined with this plastic and it's bad for you, and then she also talked about what you're talking about. And back in the Bible, where it talks about 3 days of darkness, and she thought 2012 was going to be it. Well, it didn't happen. But see, this is what I wanted to mention about is, you know, what you're talking about right now. And so the one that happened that were fried over the telegraph lines, well, let's just call that a very minor one, right? Excuse me. And if we had a like super super big one, you know, and you know, like people talk about how prophecies in the Bible, I mean, there's all different ones, right? But
wouldn't cause the sun to go dark for 3 days?
What I've been thinking for several years now is when they say 3 days of darkness, I'm thinking maybe it's a super duper, super duper duper EMP that, because stop and think of it, our bodies operate on electricity.
Yeah, but if it was so, that big, then, you know, it would just wipe everything out on the Earth.
Well, not necessarily. Maybe it was just big enough to where. I'm just trying to give it a little different scenario, okay? What I'm trying to say is, if it was just the right size of an EMP that it disrupted your electrical path of your brain, not to kill you, but enough to disconnect your visual scene.
If it was that big, it would wipe out the ozone layer and we would be dead from radiation poisoning in a matter of no time at all.
Well, that exactly would explain the Georgia Guidestones. So there's probably
not
enough
would
people
that
are
the Georgia Guidestones.
Well, I'm saying is, you know, they want to percentage of the people wiped out, and that would wipe out
about the sun on the Georgia Guidestones.
No, I know. What I'm saying is that would explain the reduced population of what they're saying in the Georgia Guidestones, and you know, people just just kind of like the old Twilight Zone, the dude that played the Penguin in the old original Batman, you know, and And he was lucky enough to be in that vault of that bank, you know. And so there'd be enough people that were lucky enough to get that number down. Because you're talking about a horrific number of people dying to be able to do that, you know. But what I'm saying is something like that, if it was just strong enough not to actually kill you, but make you go blind for 3 days, you know, how many people in the world would die, you know?
Over. Going blind for 3 days is different than the sun going out for 3 days.
Well, what is interesting?
What I'm saying, you talk about people driving along the road and everything, and people be walking off the cliffs, and you know they'd be dying like flat out crazy, like, you know.
Have you ever seen the movies Left Behind?
Yeah, there's three of them.
All right,
am I not correct?
There you go. That explains it right there.
I'd like a moment of to speak. One of the things that I found out was that a good old microwave makes a very good, very effective Faraday box. So I've got an old microwave in the lower garage, and inside of it is a coil, set of points, a whole bunch of wire with quick connect ends on it, long enough to jump start my car, and I've got a battery with absolutely no fluid in it. I am still talking, son. And I figure if we have a EMT off of the sun, I'll be able to get my car running. And I rebuilt the engine, so it's only got 3,000 miles on it. And it's a 1948 car. Very simple.
Yeah. ASJ, I'd just like to say that the only way that microwave would be would work is you'd have to cut off that antenna. The power cord would be like an antenna, and the EMP would go inside the microwave.
As long as it's grounded out.
Nope. Once you have a Faraday box, you can have openings through the Faraday box. The Faraday box is basically how you generate a protective field when you have a Faraday blast. Like off the sun we were talking about. Over.
Well, see, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is all the electrical wiring in our house, you know, supplies our electricity that we watch our TVs with and operate our coffee pot and all that stuff. They're basically an antenna, you know.
But you get a strong enough blast, and every bit of wiring that you see around you will glow red hot. So it gives you an idea of what kind of fire damage you could get. You know, with the kind of weather we've been having and situation with the fires here in the West Coast, we're not that far from initiating a global cooling. You know, we're pretty close. We can kick it over and get glaciers back again. It happens fairly often in this planet's history.
That's what usually, this is, what's happening in the world today usually happens just before the next ice age, and that's just what's going on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. SJ, what I was referring to, I wasn't referring to about when I said the wires in your house as an antenna. I wasn't referring to it as an EMP event. I was referring to it as all the military and everything. Well, not military. Let's just say the underground, the cabal, whatever you want to call them. You know, they radiate in your brain, you know, through the wires of your big kit. Let me explain this really, really fast for listeners out there that have not knowledge about this. Is the electricity comes through your house, it's 110 volts, right? Okay, actually what is happening, once 60 times in every second, that voltage goes to like 170 positive and goes back down to 170 negative and does that 60 times a second. And so, therefore, when it comes back down and it gets to the 0 volt point, you know, before it goes into negative, the computers are so fast now, they can send signals through that wire when it's at that 0 point. And so they're able to send signals 60 times in 1 second, which, you know, that's the way some electrical devices work now. You know, like, you know, the thing they advertised years ago.
Well, what's the point, Daryl?
Well, what I'm saying is years ago, they advertised where, you know, you can extend your Wi-Fi or extend your phone, you know, and all you got to do is plug it in an outlet. And then on the other side of the house, plug this receiver in the outlet. And that's what they're doing. They're receiving the signal when it goes through that 0 point. But the thing is,
what did that have to do with a Faraday cage?
Well, that's what I'm saying. A Faraday cage ain't no good unless everything coming from the outside is totally cut off.
Well, actually, you don't have it plugged into the wall.
Actually, what you need to do with a Faraday cage is attach it to a ground.
Ground, yeah. You take that cord and you cut the end off it, you strip it back, and you hook it on a ground and drive a rod in the ground.
Right.
No, my point is people put up all this protection stuff, paint and all the stuff that's, you know, keeps the you know, stuff from coming into their home. But what they don't realize is if they're hooked up to the electric grid, it's coming in through the wires.
Yeah, you can take chicken wire and make yourself a Faraday cage any size you want.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. But if you're using electricity that's hooked to the grid...
Well, no, you don't want electricity in it. The whole thing is to keep electrical impulses out of the cage.
That's what I'm saying. You would have to be totally dependent on...
I mean, that's the premise of the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying. You would have to have, for your power, for your refrigerator, your lights, and everything, would have to be powered by something inside that Faraday cage. Because if you have any kind of power, powering all your refrigerator and all that, your appliances coming from the outside, it's going to come through the wires and affect you just the same, even if you have a Faraday cage. Over.
It ain't a Faraday cage if you got wires coming into it. I mean,
well, that's what I'm talking about. You know, like Hawk mentioned.
If anybody's interested in it, just go to Google and type in Faraday cage. You'll get all the information you need about it.
Well, what I was going to explain is Hawk. You know, he talked about how, you know, he's got one of these old houses that, you know, when they build them, they got the 2x4s and they got the little thin slats and they put chicken wire.
That's only it'll stop stuff like radio waves and things like that. But no,
Well, see, that's what I'm trying to say is that will stop it. But if you
were talking about he was talking about a microwave oven, not a house.
An old one.
No, I'm talking about there was a show.
No, I'm talking about SJ was.
Well, listen, gents, hold on. Before we get too radical here, I love you both.
He's gone.
Hold on, I'm still talking, if you don't mind. Okay, so anyhow, here's the deal. If you get on the web and you put in, how do I protect myself from stray electromagnetic pulses from the sun? And 1,000 items on the web will immediately greet you. And you can read about how to do it. Okay? Yeah. So get the stuff from somebody else. I've given you as much as I know. Over.
So that's what I'm just saying. If you are connected to the grid, it will come in through your line. And what I was talking about, Hawk.
It
is,
really does need to come in.
SJ, you just got done interrupting me.
Listen,
SJ, you just said,
okay
I'll call you father because you're interrupting me, SJ. Okay, I'm not done, SJ.
See you later. Bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Love you both.
Anyway, what I'll say is Hawk was talking about, you know, his house being basically a Faraday cage. Because all
you
that chicken
wire.
You've
said this 3 times now, Daryl.
But you interrupted me before I got to my point.
We already know what you were saying. And it's put down. It's got wire.
It
won't work.
I never got to my point. So how could that be?
What the hell is your point? That was what my question was 10 minutes ago.
Okay, well, let me finish without being interrupted, and then I'll get to my point.
You're just carrying on and on and on.
Okay, let me do it real quick then. Hawk, you mentioned how he took the way his house was constructed, you know, basically chicken wire, which is a perfect grid, you know. Just for example, for people who don't know what we're talking about, is a microwave. The door, you can see inside the microwave, but what it actually is a screen, right? And because it's a screen, the microwave can't pass through it because there may be holes there and you can see through it, but they're close enough where the microwave can't go through. And the same way as what Hawk was saying about the chicken wire on all the walls, and he grounded that chicken wire. But the thing is if you are connected to electricity coming into your house, I swear that sounds like
look, you were both interrupting each other, and that's all there is to it, you know, so neither one of you are, you know, any better than the other. Yep, remember the chickens are safe.
This is not SJ. This is not SJ. This is Mr. Roe.
Roe, I love you. Roe, I love you.
Because I wanted to tell you that a Faraday cage can be penetrated. Low-level magnetic field. There's actually a special weapon that is designed to penetrate a Faraday cage. Basically, the air gap of a Faraday cage is its weakness. So you can create. There's a special type of Faraday cage you can create out of a mesh, but you can't have any air gap. So that's the weakness. Otherwise, there are magnetic weapons. Magnetic fields that can penetrate Faraday.
Yeah, we were talking about natural EMP is what SJ was talking about, not weapons.
Oh.
You know.
I just finished my fish burger, and I tuned in and thought I'd just call up and say hello.
Oh. Hey, well, you were my first 30 minutes on air today.
Yeah, I heard that part too, but I heard myself before.
Well, would you describe that fish burger? I'm really curious what that is.
Well, it's it's beer battered fish with cheese on a sourdough English muffin and tartar sauce, basically. Yeah.
Oh, you just remind me. I need to throw some more wood in my grill.
Was that North Atlantic cod, or did you use something from California where you might be glowing soon?
No, it was. What do they call that? Farmed fish. So, it was prison fish, prisoner fish.
Prisoner fish.
is there chicken wire above that grid?
I have no idea, but there's chicken wire above the koi pond. Because if you don't put chicken wire by the koi pond, if the cats don't eat the koi, the birds will.
The birds will.
Yeah, the hawks here will. I've seen people buy them things, stick them in their pond, and the hawk the next day eat two of them, you know. They pay 50, 60 bucks for them damn fish, you know.
Right. Yeah. So we haven't been hit by any earthquakes or meteors yet. We're supposed to have, it's supposed to be D-Day like today and tomorrow here on the West Coast. So hopefully we will make it through that and continue on to bigger and better things. Yes.
Well, you know, when they predicted the 2012 thing, they didn't figure out the Mayan calendar correctly, right?
Well, no, they misinterpreted it. It wasn't the end of the world. It was the end of an age and the beginning of the next age.
Well, no, yeah. Well, it was, you know, actually it was the end of the world as we know it. But no, what I'm saying is they actually didn't figure in the correct way the clock worked, and it was actually years away from what they thought it was supposed to be.
Like I said, the correct thing of it is it was the end of one age and the beginning of the next age. They also found another clock that goes on for another 30 or 60,000 years.
Oh. And, you know, people talk about the Chinese, China, or somebody using an EMP weapon as an airburst. But to be honest with you, I would have to say that the airspace over the United States and most of the Western Hemisphere is pretty secure from, you know, those kinds of things. Maybe something from space, but even up there now that we have Space Force.
Well, you know, a meteor can have cause an EMP.
Well, yeah. Now, a meteor would be a natural event, more like, you know, it wouldn't be like, you know, Russia and China deciding they're going to try to take out our grid. And also, I think that there are weapons that we have that would literally run circles around what they have in the air, in the sea, everywhere.
Well, I think that's what kept them off our asses for the last 10 years or so.
Well, that's why we leaked that footage from the DOD footage and said, look, you know, UFOs, and they were the pilots were laughing, like, oh, look at him. And because they knew that was probably one of their buddies flying the damn thing, and that was kind of a leak so that China would be aware that, you know, look, you know, we got stuff that's going to, you know, run circles around whatever you've got, whatever plans you think you stole from us for our Raptors or our stealth fighters. You were allowed to steal those, China. You were allowed.
Okay. I got a question for you. Okay. Put this into your mind. You know, do you think the government would actually let us know that something is coming by that is so large that would be the same size and have the same destruction of what created the Grand Canyon? Over.
Well, the Grand Canyon was probably created.
Yeah, it depends on what you think created the Grand Canyon.
I think what created the Grand Canyon was the same thing on Mars, where a large planet came so close to the other planet that you had electrostatic
energy. More than likely that's what it was, in my opinion. You know, really, actually, for two planets to actually collide is almost the probability is really high. It isn't really more than likely they're going to actually touch. And then the electricity will knock them away from each other. And it'll leave let me finish.
It would leave
a star like the Grand Canyon or the Mariana's Trench on Mars.
Okay.
Universalist theory.
No, okay. You don't think that the Grand Canyon was mined by Titans, you know, that they scraped the walls?
People think that.
Okay, Gerald, what's your opinion?
Well, I think maybe they were mined after it got carved open and all that minerals was just exposed. So, yeah, I'd take advantage of that. But what I'm saying is that...
Damn, I lost my train of thought. I apologize.
You were saying it was it's part of the electric theory, Thunderbolt Project. If you want to go look up on the internet, you can get all the information up there about it.
Yeah, right. But I had a curve on that. Go ahead. I'll think about it.
I think it was mine during the time when Devil's Tower was a tree. Fully standing.
There's a possibility that it was a tree.
Not
a tree in the sense that we know trees, but a silicone life-based form.
Right, exactly. Devil's Tower.
That's not the only one. There's places all over the world where that same structure,
it
can be seen. And if you look at them structures and then look at actual tree stumps that are becoming petrified, they're exact duplicates of them, except huge.
Right, exactly. There was a time where not only did we have Medusa technology to turn things to stone and transmutate, but I think that there was a silicon-based, possibly a silicon-based form of life that was running. And then that runs parallel to my theory of silicon versus carbon.
Have you seen the video "There Are No Forests on Earth"?
Yes,
that is a good video. I mean, he goes in depth in it. And now there's two versions of it. There's a German version, the original, and then there's an American version of it.
Well, I thought it was a Russian.
Would you please put a link into?
I don't have the link off, and I've seen it years ago.
Now, when I lived in Italy, I visited several places where there's these giant statues. And during World War II, during the bombing, a lot of these statues got, damaged. And so parts of the arms and stuff broke off. And as I was looking at them, I thought, now it didn't click until later. But while I was there, I remember looking at them and going, that's odd how they actually included the muscle structure and the veins on the inside of the sculpture. I'm like, you can see how the veins run. Why would they do that? And then it clicked on me. They didn't. That was turned to stone. That was once a living thing.
Exactly. I've heard this several times before on different, not that area, but different areas. And it's like, it makes me think that, we have gone through a reset, but we have not gotten back to the point that we have.
Well, I don't know about a reset now, Daryl. Yeah. I believe there's been several races here, and if you look back in our geological history, every animal out there, there was a huge version of it. The only animal that they say wasn't a huge version of was man. Give me a break. No, I remember the only one that wasn't huge.
Let me finish what I started to say is we've gone through a reset, and we've gone through many resets, and but this last progression that we're in right now, we have not gotten to the point of the ability that we had before the last reset. And that's what I'm saying is that there was a technology back then that was able to take and just wipe out everything by what I'm saying is the stone being turned to stone. And that's why you see the veins, because that's what they really were. You are actually looking at someone who was turned to stone. That's why you see the veins.
Now, all you're doing is repeating exactly what he said, but using twice as many and three times as many words.
But you said we're not in a reset.
Well, no, I don't think it's a reset. Who knows the reason that everything was turned to stone? It could have been a natural reason.
Well, would you consider...
And if it was silicone, I mean, that's what the Earth is made of, is silicone. I mean, all the dirt is silicone, all the trees are, all the rocks are silicone.
Well, I was just fixing to say is, don't you think that Atlantis at that point of time, when it disappeared,
don't you think that we went through a reset at that particular time? Over.
I have no proof Atlantis was real. Can you show me Atlantis?
Can you show me not?
I can show you the whole world, and then you point out where it is.
we're getting really close to the subject of the Matrix.
It was never mentioned. Was it?
You cut out. I didn't hear what you said.
Before Plato, it was never mentioned in history.
Yeah, but see, you're talking about written history. What about the there's older history that
it doesn't say anything about it. You can't find it written down anywhere about Atlantis before Plato. There's not one word written about Atlantis before Plato.
You're just going to have to show me proof in the pudding on that one.
No, you're going to have to show me proof in the pudding that it actually exists. That's like telling me the reptilians are running the United States. Prove to me they're not.
See,
you're trying to prove a negative. You can't prove a negative.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying, This all may be a matrix. We have no idea what is real and what is not real.
The canon says Plato was relating spoken history. Yeah, well, that's not necessarily mean it was true. The point is you can prove there was a global society here before they say it was here. We've got a lot of proof of that, but they still won't say it. We got about 5 minutes. Mr. Rowe done left. Couldn't talk, so he left.
Well, there I go again, talking. Didn't realize I was on mute.
Eagle Fire is one of our weaknesses, that we only believe in what is written as history. No, that's not really a weakness. That's just vindication. Hell, you could take one of my stories in 1,000 years and they think it's true. Right?
Eagle. Okay. I want to clarify myself. Is Eagle Flower the one that is producing for Johnny? Yes.
And she has her own show now, too, I believe.
Exactly. And I missed out when that is.
Well, that's why we got a schedule. You can go there and look.
That's what I was going to say. I could always look at the schedule. I haven't heard her new show. I've just heard her on, producing for Johnny, and I'm very, very impressed with her. And
we've only got written history of about 5,000 years. Any more than that, it's all speculation.
Yeah, but what about all the stuff that's written in stone?
Well, it's still, we don't know what it means or how old it is, because you can't date stone.
Well, here's my theory on that is, throughout time, when new inventions are invented, it's like it doesn't happen, but all of a sudden, different people will get that idea and get that patent, that invention, but it's the first one who registered it that gets the credit, like the Wright brothers. Because apparently there was other people that were developing an airplane at the very same time that they did, but, they got there first, And I think that... as we go through our time, that there are certain things that are set in time that are not allowed to happen until that time comes.
I think certain things lead to other certain things, and You can't have a jet airplane before you have a glider.
Well, true. And I lost the words. So, I'm trying to think of
so things go on in a progression. So, you know, yes, the radio is the three people filed for patent on the radio on the same day around the world. But they were all working towards the radio.
Right.
You know, and the basics didn't change from one country to the other. And they are all just tuned in to the right spot at the right time. You know, I mean, if it wasn't coincidence, then there is something called the Akashic field, and they were able to tap into it, and they all got this information at the same time.
But
more than likely, it was a progression of thought that brought them all to the same point at the same time.
What I believe is we have a creator. And he is not allowing us to step to the next step until the right time comes along.
Well, that's possible.
And that's why...
It could be just a damn programmer out there that decides it, does it? I mean, the possibilities are endless, Daryl. You can speculate all you want on all these thoughts, but none of them, you know, only one of them's right. There's the end of the show.
Great end show, yeah.
Have a good evening. Noreen's up next. Wild at Heart Roundtable. Y'all have a good night.
I love you, Matt, and all you listeners out there, I love you very much.
Over. Have a good night.
Listening to Revolution.